It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Wisconsin's Supreme Court elections were once obscure, low turnout affairs. Otherwise reliable voters often stayed home. Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz is doing everything she can to prevent that this year, and she's getting a big assist from the Democratic Party. As Sean Johnson reports, Protasiewicz has been open about her personal beliefs on issues that could become before the court.
On a Saturday night in March, people lined up down the block outside the Barrymore Theater on Madison's East Side. The featured act that night, a live recording of the national show Pod Save America, was in town to bring attention to Wisconsin's Supreme Court race. At the front of the line is Madison resident Ariel Hendrickson, who says the election boils down to two issues.
Abortion rights and making sure that gerrymandering does not get any worse in our state.
Person after person says the same thing. And Sheila Hosseini of Madison says people understand the stakes of the race, which could flip the court from a conservative to a liberal majority for the first time in 15 years.
Probably. I mean, I know people keep saying this, but this is probably one of the most important elections for Wisconsin, especially because reproductive rights are on the line.
Protasiewicz says she decided to run for the court precisely because it's so important. Prior to being a judge, she spent decades as a Milwaukee County prosecutor. Whoever wins Wisconsin's Supreme Court race will likely hear a challenge to the state's pre-Civil War abortion ban. Protasiewicz is facing former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly. He's backed by Republicans and endorsed by the state's three anti-abortion groups.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Judge Janet Protasiewicz.
During a brief interview in front of a packed theater at the Pod Save America recording, Protasiewicz is asked what kind of difference she could make on abortion rights if she wins.
So I'll tell you this. I have been very, very forthright that my personal value is that women have a right to choose.
She's also asked about Wisconsin's Republican-drawn legislative districts. Protasiewicz calls the maps rigged. And she adds,
I would certainly welcome the opportunity to have a fresh look at our maps.
The Democratic voters in this auditorium know her message, possibly because they've had a chance to hear it everywhere. Protasiewicz has shattered campaign fundraising records thanks to millions of dollars in transfers from the state Democratic Party. That same night, party chair Ben Wickler frames the stakes in presidential terms. He asks Democrats to imagine it's election night in 2024. The eyes of the nation are on swing state Wisconsin. A lawsuit is filed, and the court's conservative majority stops the count.
And record scratch, freeze frame, you think to yourself, in 2023, I had a chance to stop this guy from getting on the Supreme Court and casting that deciding vote.
There are those who think the level of political drama playing out in Wisconsin's Supreme Court race is inappropriate. Former Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske was appointed to the court in 1993 and won election in 1994. She thinks court races have gotten too political and says both sides are to blame.
You know, historically, when we ran, and I ran a long time ago, we wouldn't go anywhere near talking about an issue that might come before the court.
Kelly has been far more guarded about sharing his personal views. He argues Protasiewicz crossed a line by sharing hers. Supreme Court races are still technically nonpartisan, but people who show up to see Protasiewicz in Madison are okay with the way she talks about the race. Carol Drysdale says it's a nice idea that a justice could be completely objective.
That someone can leave behind everything that they are and everything that they have experienced and lived through and just leave it all at the door and be completely objective. But that's not how human beings work.
Drysdale says there's more at stake in this race than just purely judicial matters. She says she knows where Protasiewicz stands on issues like abortion rights and says that's why she's voting for her. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Earlier, we heard a profile of former Justice Dan Kelly. You can read both stories and more coverage of Wisconsin Supreme Court race at WPR.org. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward, in for Kate Archer-Kent. When the total supply of all versions of a commercially available medication cannot meet current demand, The results can be devastating. As we hear about the extent of the problem in Wisconsin, join in anytime with your questions or thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David Krueger is the Community Pharmacy Operations Manager with SSM Health. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Ariel Thurmer is the System Clinical Manager of Pharmacy Services at SSM Health. Ariel, welcome.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
David, in October, the FDA announced a shortage of immediate-release form of Adderall. This made headlines everywhere. Nearly 6 months later, the FDA says some forms of the drug remain in short supply. What's the situation with ADHD medication in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so it did start primarily with that Adderall shortage, but as you can imagine, as you know, doctors and pharmacists are looking for alternatives, you're basically pivoting all these patients away. So it's just had a trickle-down effect to a lot of your, you know, alternative medications for ADHD. It's been a pretty short supply for the most part.
Ariel, last week, a U.S. Senate report said drugs like children's flu medication and common antibiotics are running in short supply as well. Which other drugs in Wisconsin are pharmacists struggling to keep in stock?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, we have hundreds of meds regularly on drug shortages for healthcare are not a new thing. It's been decades of drug shortages. And sometimes it's not even the drug component itself, it's the packaging that may be short. So to say just what are the top drug shortages right now is kind of difficult. We are regularly handling drug shortages. And the big part that from pharmacy and healthcare that we want to share is, you know, it's probably a good thing that it hasn't been known that it's been decades of that. That means we were doing our jobs and preventing it from getting to the patient. I would say it's coming to light a lot more right now because we learned a lot through the pandemic and a lot of conversation around shortages around supplies and everything. So we do have other shortages. The cold and flu meds are starting to improve. We were seeing some shortages or still are feeling some shortages with our albuterol nebulizers. And again, like David alluded to, that leads to secondary shortages as we work to get patients alternatives to take care of them. But we are regularly handling shortages and trying to decrease that impact to our patients.
David, how does this even happen? I mean, hearing Ariel talk about how long you've been grappling with this is surprising. And I guess I just wonder, what are the factors that make this a thing?
Yeah, that can be, it's multifaceted, really. Ariel touched on it a little bit with, it could be something as small as the purple cap that goes on top of one of the COVID vaccine vials could be in short supply because some factory got shut down due to whatever, whether they had an issue with raw materials or not. All the way down to not being able to produce enough drug because the FDA shut down a certain production line because they found an issue with it. There's so many different reasons that it can happen. And unfortunately, it isn't new, but it is. I feel the pressure a little bit more as of late because of the pandemic. It seemed to really ramp up the number of issues. It seems to just be coming at a more rapid pace at us.
How did the COVID pandemic contribute to this, Ariel? Is it because of people not working as much, or what are those factors?
Always multifaceted there. If a line, so in manufacturing the drugs, if any of those lines that is manufacturing that drug component for us is transitioned to something else that's of higher need. So during the pandemic, a lot of the meds we needed to support our patients who were in our ICUs on ventilators, we saw a lot of different manufacturers and groups step up and say, this line can be turned over to start making this med that we know is going to be short, making some of those raw material things that like masks, supplies, our PPE, So anytime we had to transition that area that was normally making some of these meds, you know, that takes that back supply off the shelf. And so it was anticipated when we had to make those shifts, which were needed at the time, it was anticipated that we would have a few years. And when they anticipated the few years, they were talking like 5 to 6 years after the pandemic that we would feel this ripple effect as we started moving back into our normalcy of needing certain drug therapies for different disease states.
Wow, that long. So, David, you know, America faced drug shortages before the pandemic, as we've said. You guys have been, you know, dealing with this for a while. Sometimes we hear about it, sometimes we don't. So, David, I want to ask you, how severe is this ongoing drug shortage now? How bad are things right now?
I would say manageable for the most part. We have mitigation strategies, whether it's Ariel's team coming up with ways to preserve some of our stock for the most needy patients, or we have in our community pharmacies, we started expanding the number of wholesalers that we deal with. So if we find short supply in our primary wholesaler, we start trying to find it with secondary and tertiary wholesalers. I think the Adderall got so much light because you can't get a year's supply from the doc, so you have to keep getting more prescriptions from your doc, and B, we can't order that type of, that type of medication from all of our wholesalers. So some of the strategies that we have in play to help with a lot of drug shortages doesn't help us with that Adderall shortage. So I think this is why this one has gotten so much press, because it is just a little bit different.
I see. We're talking about drug shortages at Wisconsin pharmacies. Our guests are from SSM Health. David Kruger is the Community Pharmacy Operations Manager. Ariel Thurmer is the System Clinical Manager of Pharmacy Services. Be a part of this conversation by calling in with your questions or comments. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Have you been prescribed medication only to be told it's unavailable? What happened next? Call us with your experiences and your questions about drug shortages, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. David Kruger is the Community Pharmacy Operations Manager with SSM Health. Ariel Thurmer is the System's Clinical Manager of Pharmacy Services at SSM Health. They stay with us. Ariel, last year, a 60 Minutes investigation found that some drug shortages are due to pharmaceutical companies stopping the production of life-saving generic drugs because they make too little profit, where they're just, well, we're not going to make the money, we're not going to make that medication. Are company profits a factor in the current shortages?
Yeah, I would say from a healthcare standpoint, we try not to, we probably actually don't have the time, energy, and space to really get into that too much when we're trying to manage the shortage. So a lot of times we're told the shortage is happening because the company has chose to stop making it. And instead of having to get into the why on why they've stopped, we're really more spending our energy on how to make sure our patient doesn't feel that impact and what we can do to get our other wholesalers and stock up on what we can to then get ready for transitioning to an alternative. So I think that is some valuable things that are being brought up and discussed. But from a healthcare standpoint, really, when we're told the shortage is happening, we're more concerned about what we need to do to take care of the patient.
What about, I mean, do doctors know this when they're prescribing this stuff? Do they already know, hey, this drug is not going to be available, I've got to think about something else? Or does it only become evident to the patient when they go to the pharmacy and try to fill a prescription, Ariel?
Yeah, so I think that's the communication that we work really hard to do as a system. We still are working on ways to improve and optimize that. As David alluded to, we have a system team that just focuses on drug shortages. That's pharmacy and supply based. And then we work as a small team once that shortage comes in or a presumed shortage comes in to think, okay, here's the current shortage. What's the secondary shortage? Like we were talking the ripple effect with the Adderall. And then we immediately start working on communication strategies, and we have templates for how we communicate that out. We do our best to get it into the pharmacy team's hands and then to get it into our provider hands. What we find is it's really a team effort. And so if we can get it to the providers and get it to all of them before they start prescribing, that's great. But we also have found, you know, if we make sure to prepare the pharmacist or equip the pharmacist with that alternative information, it makes it easier for them to call and have that conversation with the provider. And then that is kind of a way to communicate it to the physician that the drug is short and here's your alternatives, and it's going to be short for a period of time. So we have been working as a team to script that communication and make sure to equip David's teams on the front who are patient facing.
And David, let's talk about that a little bit. What happens at the pharmacy? What tools do pharmacists have for filling prescriptions when drugs are in short supply and demand remains high? Do they get these prescriptions? Are they empowered to make a substitution, or do they then need to contact the doctor? Take me through that a little bit.
Yeah, so it depends on the class of medications. So a lot of medications we can make, you know, therapeutic substitutions. Unfortunately, as we started the conversation, it always kind of comes back to this Adderall. That one's deemed by the DEA it's called a Schedule II medication. So we can't really make changes on the prescription. We're going to need a new order. So basically, like Ariel said, it starts with the communication. It gives our pharmacist the tools, information, and most of the time it does result in a call to the physician's office or the provider's office. And we have started opening up, because it's been such an ongoing issue, we started opening up direct communication with our pharmacist and the providers, because SSM is such a big entity, mm-hmm. which provides us some luxuries like this, where we can have, you know, direct lines of communication with our shared platforms of technologies and things like that. So yeah, basically we get the prescription, we tell the patient that we don't have it in stock. Sometimes we even call competitive pharmacies. That is one thing that really has shined through, and I'm proud of pharmacy for in the pandemic, is we're not just caring about our bottom line, we're caring about the patient. So if we don't have it, none of our sister pharmacies have it. We do reach out to the Walgreens, the Walmarts, just to see, you know, because mm-hmm. the first thing is to take care of the patient. We have a lot of tools in our tool belt, but primarily it does come back down to us having to reach out to that provider and work with them to get a substitution for the patient, which unfortunately does take time.
We are talking about prescription drug shortages with David Krueger and Ariel Thurmer of SSM Health. David is a community pharmacy operations manager. Ariel is the system clinical manager of pharmacy services. Ariel, are drug shortages affecting patient outcomes?
Oh, for sure. I mean, like we stated, there are alternative therapies, and we pivot to those as much as we can. We try to equip our patient-facing team members as much as possible, having those alternatives on the shelf. But I would say quality of care can sometimes be impacted when we can't move that fast enough. And then we also, you know, there are situations where, as David stated, we don't have an alternative drug, or we've used up our alternative supply already with that ripple effect, and we still aren't seeing supply back on our shelves. And in that case, that's where we really have to pivot into a mitigation strategy, which is really stating, you know, these are the patients at highest need for the drug that we have available. And then, you know, these patients, we may have to try some different supportive care. And we really do our best to not get to that point. We work as a collaborative team. It's all hands on deck when we get to that point with a drug shortage. But there there are definitely points where we are we micromanage some of these drug shortages when it gets to the point that the primary shortage and alternatives are no longer on our shelves.
Ariel, do you see any potential action that lawmakers could take either on the state or federal level that could help reduce these drug shortages?
I think this is a huge part of just getting the word out there. Like I said, we've been doing this for decades, and we were, I would say, healthcare is proud that, you know, maybe it didn't hit the forefront because it meant our patients were able to get care. But as we continue to talk about this and bring awareness to drug shortages, I think it does help our political teams know that that is an area that we really do need support. From the healthcare standpoint, I don't necessarily have the answer to what they should or shouldn't be saying on those for the political piece, but we do have healthcare teams do go out and talk with our legislative groups. And so when we are advocating for support with law changes, now they know what we're talking about, you know, why it is a concern when we say, you know, we're not able to get this drug on the shelf. So just being able to bring awareness to the drug shortages and that we are able to speak to them and share the things that we have been doing, I feel is already making it a higher item for them to ask more questions about.
David, in the last 15, 20 seconds we have in our time together, what would you advise patients who are affected by these shortages?
Ask questions, show patience, and just be prepared that a lot of times you're not going to have as fast of a trip to the pharmacy as you may have had 2 years ago, unfortunately. But yeah, I would say patience and communication with your pharmacist and your provider is key.
I want to thank you both for joining us and sharing this information. It's been a fascinating discussion.
Yes, thank you for having us. We appreciate it. Have a great day.
Yes, thank you.
David Krueger is the Community Pharmacy Operations Manager with SSM Health. Ariel Thurmer is the System Clinical Manager of Pharmacy Services there. I am Shereen Siewert. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.